Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK.
Coming up on this week's show, Insecure star Issa Rae is here to chat about her new romantic comedy, Lovebirds, which debuts this weekend on Netflix. Singing sisters Aaron and Alexis Jones are here to chat about their newest project, Magic Jones, which features new versions of children's nursery rhymes. And my special segment, The Show Must Go On, Entertainment and COVID-19, continues with Broadway stars Saquon Simbla, Quentin Earl Darrington, and Lamar Baylor. They'll be talking about surviving the pandemic and how it is reshaping the Great White Way. I'll also be playing music from Magic Jones, along with Shirley Horn and Brian Stokes Mitchell. But first, here's Reva Blue with this week's entertainment news.
All right, Mr. DeMille. I'm ready for my close-up.
The Oprah Winfrey Network, OWN, announced this week that it's developing a spinoff of its critically acclaimed hit megachurch drama, Greenleaf. The plans were accelerated when fans expressed their support for the show after its final season was announced a few weeks ago, reaffirming its passionate fan base. The spinoff would join OWN's lineup of prestige scripted programming, including Terrell Alvin McCraney's David Makes Men, Ava DuVernay's popular drama Queen Sugar, and anthology series Cherish the Day, and Tyler Perry's long-running The Haves and the Have-Nots. Watch the trailer for Greenleaf's fifth and final season at WCLK.com. In other related news, TV One is celebrating Black Music Month in June with the debut of its original documentary, The Beat Don't Stop. It airs on Sunday, June 21st at 8 p.m., followed by an encore presentation at 10 p.m. The long-awaited documentary was a year in the making and highlights the history and legacy of go-go music. It features trailblazers, legends, and stars who have championed the sound throughout the decades, including the godfather of go-go music, Chuck Brown. Watch the exciting trailer at WCLK.com. That's this week's entertainment news. I'm Reva Blue.
Support for WCLK programming comes from Georgia Power with this COVID-19 message. Georgia Power wants the community to know our customers are at the heart of everything we do. Our promise to you is safe and reliable service during the COVID-19 pandemic. Georgia Power also wants to remind customers to practice social distancing should you see personnel working in your area. Following recent severe weather, always assume that any down power line is live. Stay away and report dangerous conditions. More information is available at georgiapower.com/COVID-19.
Hi, this is Iyanla Van Zandt, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
My first segment features award-winning actress and YouTube sensation Issa Rae. She's starring alongside comedic actor Kamal Nanjiani in the new romantic comedy Lovebirds. The film follows a New Orleans couple on the verge of breaking up who somehow fall into a murder mystery and an underworld of sex and corruption. Issa Rae serves as one of the film's executive producers and says she wanted to star in the film project after reading the script. I talked to her earlier this week as part of AFCA's Roundtable series.
Reading the script made me laugh. I think initially it was just being drawn to this idea of a couple that was on the brink of moving on from one another and then being roped into this murder mystery cracked me up. And then seeing that Kumail was attached and thinking that he's so funny and, you know, having watched him for such a long time, I just got excited at the idea of being able to work with him.
Issa Rae also talked about the physicality of this role and doing lots of improv.
Lots of physical comedy, more than I anticipated when I read the script. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm doing this. And obviously we had stunt help, but we were doing a lot of it and learning the choreography for the fight scenes. And luckily we were supposed to be bad fighters, so that worked for me. And then on the improvisation side, so much of it is improvised. I think, you know, by the time we shot, Kumail and I knew the script so well, we knew what beats of the scenes we were supposed to hit. And he loves to play. It was really fun to play with him. So we were just, and the director, of course, allowed that. He would just be like, do what you want this take, or, you know, this scene. And so, yes, a lot of, I don't remember the movie right now. I can't wait to watch it this week, but a lot of it is improvised.
Issa Rae also talked about putting a different spin on interracial dating between Black women and Asian men, both for the film and for this current season of Insecure.
It's just a dynamic that interested me after having read an article about it, in 2010, 2011, and then that study reemerged again with dating apps and seeing that, you know, Black women and Asian men were the least desired. And so for me, it was just about showcasing couples that you don't get to see on TV, and specifically interracial couples that don't necessarily involve white people. And so I think that was another factor that interested me.
Lovebirds is available now on Netflix.
Jazz 91.9 WCLK stands with the High Museum of Art. The High Museum stands with WCLK. During these difficult times, we're all in this together, even if we must be apart. Up-to-date information about the High Museum's plan for the future is available at high.org. Stay in touch. Keep listening to Jazz 91.9 WCLK.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. Up above the world so high, like a diamond in the sky. Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star.
This is Lisa Arendell, and you're listening to Ray Cornelius on Upfront.
You just heard a new rendition of the classic children's lullaby, Twinkle Twinkle, performed by sisters Erin and Alexis Jones. The song was created in response to parents and fans of R&B coping with homeschooling their children during the COVID-19 pandemic. Magic Jones features an array of diverse nursery rhymes and characters that parents can use to educate their elementary school children. Alexis currently lives in Los Angeles and sings with Kanye West Sunday Service, and Erin resides here in Atlanta and is one-third of the R&B group Brownstone. I caught up with the two this week to chat about their song's success and much more.
So I guess it started with a writing, me and Erin's writing process. We were at her house, I remember, and we made up some corny song, but we were already in the direction of doing kids' music. And then when it got to the hook, we just added Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And that's for most songwriters, we'll do a ABC melody and then fill in the words, you know, when you're writing a song. So it just came natural, just Twinkle Twinkle came into a hook, and we was like, wait a second, we can park it here. Like, let's take this, revamp it. And then we just picked some of our favorite songs. On the EP, it's Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, Mary Had a Little Lamb, which we have turned that into a whole mom theme song or dad theme song. And then the happy and You Know It, Clap Your Hands, it's actually like a family cookout kind of song. It turned into a fun family cookout. So it's amazing, and I'm thrilled. I can't wait for everybody to hear how we switched it all up.
Yeah. And what has been the feedback so far with the song? Because the video, I was playing a little video, and I was like, okay, 20.
Funny, because it has been a lot of adults have been like, you know what, this is my jam, I go to sleep with this, because it's that like comfort food, like when you know that song you remember growing up and just feel good. Twinkle Twinkle Little Star just is a feel good song anyway.
Yeah. And,
you we've know, gotten a lot of DMs that adults are going to sleep to Twinkle Twinkle. So that's something that we intended for kids, it turned into something else. But the kids are, what we've seen and what people have posted, it is the most, I like literally probably shed a tear every day with these little Black girls. As soon as they see the fairies pop up, like we have videos and they're like,
That's me.
And they'll say it like, that's me. So that feeling, that fulfilling feeling is just worth it all. Like, amazing.
And so both you ladies have been in the entertainment industry for quite some time. So this idea of now being in control, if you will, of being able to put positive images of African-American women in cartoons, in nursery rhymes, in music, how does that make you feel? Because that hasn't always been the case, I should say. And we can start with you, Erin.
Right. For us, it was a strong intent behind making beautiful Black, brown, multicolored children of every shade, of every kind of hairstyle. Mm-hmm. And it was funny because when we would go back with the artists, and they would draw us like moms that we're like, I don't see myself, I don't see my cousin, I don't see my next door neighbor. That don't look good. Like, no, if we wear a bush, it's not gonna be no bush that looks like that. Like, this is how we would wear a bush. This is how we wear our natural hair. This is how we wear long pigtails. So it was a real strong intent to make sure that it was representative of us as a people, us as artists and moms and wives, and, you know, just not just anything that we just like, oh, no, this is okay. Nothing was just okay. We had to make sure that it felt good, and that you would see I see beautiful Disney princesses all the time, all of them. So why can't our brown fairies be beautiful little brown fairies? And then, you know, girls of all ethnicities be accepting of those girls and see themselves in those fairies.
Absolutely. Alexis, did you want to add something to that as well?
No, Erin definitely, she covered that.
And so what is the hope? Because COVID-19 is not going to always, well, let me go back. We're not going to always be in a pandemic situation. I do believe that COVID-19 is going to be here, much like a cold or a flu. But what is your hope for Magic Jones beyond COVID-19? And maybe Alexis, you can tell us where you all want to be once this is over.
Well, originally it was, okay, we're going to put out this EP and then we're going to tour and, you know, all these great plans that we had for Magic Jones. And then of course it came to a halt. But after, I would love to pick up with the plans that we had and take this on the road, go to different schools, go to different nurseries, meet the kids, bring the fairies out. We're going to have fairies. We're going to have fairy parties. We want to be everywhere. We want to be the Black Walt Disney girl. It's like, you know what I mean? Yeah. If I could have a theme park and create it, I would love to have that as well, a fairy theme park. So we want to go all the way to the top with it.
Check out the full conversation with Erin and Alexis Jones at WCLK.com.
Programming on Jazz 91.9 WCLK is made possible in part by the Balch Law Group. Chris Balch and his team of professionals partner with local governments to build community and consensus by working with elected officials and insurers in the Atlanta area to navigate complex legal matters, economic development, and community investment, like bringing the Atlanta Hawks practice facility to Brookhaven. More information is available at BalchLawGroup.com or at
404-963-0045. This is my quest to follow that star, no matter how hopeless, no matter how far, to fight for the right.
This is Coleman Domingo, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
That was the voice of Tony Award-winning Broadway star Brian Stokes Mitchell singing the classic show tune, The Impossible Dream. Stokes performs that song every evening from his apartment window as part of New York City's salute to COVID-19 first responders. Award-winning Broadway actress and TV star Saikhon Simla is another star impacted by COVID-19. She had just completed filming for the Aretha Franklin biopic Respect in late February when infection rates began to rise around New York City. She was also gearing up for a number of pilot season auditions in early March when the coronavirus put her career on hold.
Before everything went down, I had seen some stuff, some rumors online. I had a coach come here to coach me. But then once everything really hit the fan, it was just this weird position as actors where you're like, again, a TV show could change my life. It's pilot season and I just finished my last gig. What is going to be my last gig? I mean, what is going to be my next gig? But then they're saying, don't leave the house. The authorities are saying, don't do this, don't do that. But then we're like, you know, we have to be social in order to do these acting tapes. And so it just became like a stressful thing. And so I literally kind of did my last couple of tapes. And then I told my agents, I said, hey, you guys, I'm going to go ahead and shut it down, you know, and just focus on my health and my wellness, my family, and just, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the thing is, even in the midst of trying to be like, you know, because this is the thing, people say, oh, well, your stuff, you can just do it online. You know, we can do it online. But when there's anxiety affecting you and you're worried about your health and you're like, you know, it's hard to just even focus on performing when you are afraid, you know? I started getting emails, hey, sing for relief and do this and that. And I personally, when it first went down, I just was not ready for that. I was wanting to secure my own sense of well-being. You know, I was just not ready to be trying to perform for other people. And, you know, so that's one of the interesting things being a performer is people wanting you to make them happy, wanting you to make them feel good. It's, you know what I mean? It's a part of what we do as performers. So that part was really tough for me.
So how has COVID-19, you know, affected you personally? How have you been dealing with this on a personal level?
Well, you know, on a personal level, it's been difficult at times because I am in New York, which on the news, everything is so terrible about New York being like the hotbed of the thing. And I'm sheltering in alone. I'm not living with family. I've been focused on knowing that my family as well. I have some family in New Jersey. I have family in Atlanta. I have family in Chicago, Detroit, you know, but I am sheltering in alone. And so, you know, and my friends who I was doing all those audition tapes with and stuff, we're all individually in our own individual apartments. So there was a time where we would be the only people that we would see. And then that stopped.
Oh, wow.
You know, we stopped doing tapes. We stopped seeing each other. And I have one friend who likes to check on me. Sometimes will bring me some groceries or something like that. But for the most part, I go out and get my own groceries. And I get deliveries, you know, from, you know, different companies, you know. But that's been kind of difficult. Is you know, I've been living by myself for a long time. But, you know, your work life becomes, and your social life. And being in New York, you know, you don't live in New York for the big old houses because it ain't, you know what I mean? Unless you're living upstate or living in like big, big fancy apartments and condos. So if you're living in your average everyday 1-2 bedroom apartment, it's not a huge place. You're living here for the culture, to be able to go out, go to the events, go to the, you know, the New York life. And since all of that is shut down, I already personally was considering moving and doing a more unconventional life as an actor. Maybe living in an unconventional base city and then flying out for my gigs. Because a lot of my gigs have not been in New York. Mm-hmm. Especially in the last 2-3 years, I've been doing a lot more television. But so that's been one of the most difficult parts is not having contact with people. And, you know, I love doing YouTube, you know, the whole Saycon Talks thing. It's fun to interact with people. But it's not a physical touch, you know? Yeah. And so that part has been difficult. I know you're sheltering in with your family, so I'm sure that's a lot different for you.
Yeah. It's, you know, I thank God that we are all together. But like you, I would love to see my friends. I'd love to hang out, go get a cocktail, go to a Starbucks and sit and read. But we're just not, you know, I mean, you can, some places are starting to open up, but I think just personally, I don't feel comfortable just yet getting out in public with the numbers being what they are. And most certainly, I'm sure in New York City, which is almost kind of like ground zero.
That's what they're calling it. You know, again, I haven't seen anybody. I mean, I haven't even seen anybody that was affected. But in the area that I'm in, everybody's being as safe as possible. You're seeing everybody with their gloves and their masks. you know, the funny thing is I'm a homebody. I'm at home playing with my little herbal tea, making tea concoctions and cooking and padding around my house, reading books. And that's my life, right? And then when I get a gig, I'm like, gig, sing. And then after that, I'm back home. And I'm like, But like, to be home and know that you have the option to leave.
It's different.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, oh, this is cozy, but I can't go to the mall. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm not even a big shopper like that. Like putting myself in the mode to like shop online. It's like a thing. I purposefully didn't get into online shopping like other people because I'm a homebody. So if I got into that, I would never leave my house. So I always would be like, oh, I need to go and get some dishwashing liquid. Like, let me go do that. You know, like make it an activity, you know, to go out in your day. But I find myself here. I'm like talking to my plants and taking care of them. And like, you know, not having the option is like, whew. It's tough.
According to a New York Times report, the Great White Way will remain closed through the summer. The Broadway League, a trade organization that represents producers and theater owners, said that Broadway's 41 theaters would remain closed through Labor Day. Performers Quentin Darrington from the highly anticipated MJ the Musical and Lamar Baylor from the long-running musical The Lion King were both excited about returning to work, but had opposite views about their safety on stage.
In our conversation yesterday with our producers and things, you know, I feel pretty confident that they are doing all that they can to make sure and ensure our safety, but not just ours, but also the audience members too. And so, and they have let us know, like, the task forces that they have put together to make sure that everybody is okay. And they wanted to make sure that, you know, that we are taken care of and that there are no slips through the cracks. So I understand and am patient that they will figure it out. Having a conversation yesterday definitely did put my heart and my mind at ease a little bit, knowing that they are really, really have our best interests at heart as the performers.
And Quentin, what about you? Do you feel confident right now of getting back on stage?
I actually don't. I don't feel too confident right now. I know that our producers and our whole team takes care of us and goes the extra mile, you know, for us. They already have. I mean, I've been working on MJ now for over a year, you know, before we get to Broadway. And from day one, they have been absolutely wonderful and absolutely stellar. But we're not just talking about my producers and my company. We're talking about the world. We're talking about New York. We're talking about the government. We're talking about a lot of things that, and it's a lot of places and a lot of moves that need to be made for everybody to be safe. As much as I would love to get back on stage and love to perform and I love to also be able to bless various audiences, I think it's a little short-sighted with being this August, this September. Unless we have proper vaccinations and even proper more ways to keep everyone safe that we haven't seen yet or practiced or been put in place that have been tested. You know, once that happens and it happens in a successful rate and way, you know, in a smaller unit, in a smaller way as you kind of grow and see that progress, then I'll build that confidence and see that confidence. I'm an extremely patient man. And I believe God will have his way and the right time will come. Listen, if September is that time and all of that stuff happens between now and September, great. But I just don't have confidence to see all of that happen so quickly. I really do believe it will happen by next year, possibly the spring, might even be later. But I just want everybody to be safe, especially my brothers and sisters in the arts. We need to be safe.
There has been talk of possible, because of this virus and having to social distance, and you know, when you think about theater, dance, those are the anti of social distancing, but how comfortable would you be with new technology, having more virtual, you know, theater, not necessarily having props on stage, but a huge screen as your set and your backdrop, which would decrease the number of people on stage, it would allow for more social distancing amongst the actors. Those are possible ways that we'll see theater in the future. How do you guys feel about that?
I'm not opposed to things evolving and changing, But there is something about the visions of how people wanted them to be. And, you know, and while I do understand the need and the need to be socially distant and everything, you know, there are some things like my show, I mean, yes, we do have the movie version of it and, or the movie versions of it, you know, but I would, there's something very great about the way it exists now. And I think I do believe that it is perfect in the way that it exists now. And I don't, if we have to change it, you know, mm-hmm. and if that is what is required, then so be it. I like it the way that it is though. And, you know, but I do hope that virtual theater allows people to gain access to it who don't necessarily get that opportunity to. And so for that, I'm all about, by all means, yes, by all means, do what's necessary. But the production I'm a part of currently, I would like for it to stay the way that it is.
Could you imagine them doing Lion King maybe outside? Sort of like a Shakespeare sort of like experience?
I think that would take more years to develop, truly develop. Not saying that they can't do it, because they can seem to do anything and everything. But I don't know how that would go. Yeah.
Yeah. Q?
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with my brother. I'm kind of torn on this issue, but it's kind of a push and pull with progress and time. You know, we live in a very contemporary modern age of technology, and theater can't avoid it. It's already hugely immersed in the way that we do shows today, and it's only going to progress as the years come. 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 50 years from now, theater is going to look completely different. The live theatrical experience than today, just like 50 years ago, it was very, very different. Especially there's a kind of a fight between, well, not a really a fight, but between producers and then the artisans, you know, that's a huge, the producers need to make the money, you know, to keep the thing going. So what do they want? They want a very small cast. They want a small budget. They don't, you know, they don't want to do all of the extra things, and technology provides that for them. Virtualizing everything. It happens in orchestras already today. Eventually, I envision them even having virtual actors in some kind of way, or virtual support in shows, whether it be the sound, the movement of the show. When it comes to the set, like you said, a lot of it will be projections and all those things, hologram. All of that stuff is going to come into play years down the road. The great part about that is that you can have more things that stretch the imagination and cost less. The bad part about that is that a lot of us artists will be out of work. A lot of us artists, the artistic nature of the organic piece will begin to diminish. It's kind of like kids now walking around. Lamar, you know, you teach just like me. They hear all day. You know what I'm saying? They hear in the phone all day.
Put it down.
In the phone. Yeah, put the phone down, right? Put the phone down and experience real life, because there is no substitute for real life. There's no substitute for real connection with real people. And it's the same thing with the theater. There's no substitute for it. So economically, the economics of it all, financially, I get it. But it's good and bad. But Ray, to answer your question, I do see it happening more where technology comes more into play, and smaller to cut costs and to help with distancing and so much. A lot of producers are like, oh, check, we can do this. But, you know, for us as artists, I'm like Lamar, I'd rather keep things to where the actual actors are on stage, in the building, hands-on with the people.
Check out the full conversation of The Show Must Go On, Entertainment and COVID-19, featuring Saycon Simbla, Lamar Baylor, and Quentin Darrington at WCLK.com. Well, that'll do it for this week's show. I'd like to thank all of my special guests, Issa Rae, Alexis and Aaron Jones, Saycon Simbla, Quentin Earl Darrington, and Lamar Baylor. I'd also like to thank my engineer, Jami Wellman, and you. Please join us next week for another exciting edition of Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry. Happy Saturday, Atlanta, and happy holidays.
If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK, an NPR member-supported station.